Welcome to another episode of The Cubic Report. Thank you for joining us today. My guest is Tim Martins. Tim is a longtime acquaintance and friend going back decades. He has been a school teacher, a church pastor in the United Church of God. So welcome to the podcast, Tim.
Glad to be here.
Hey, we're very happy to have you here to talk about something that I have wanted to talk to you about publicly for some time. In the last decade, or actually in the last 13 years or so, he has become a church pastor serving in Northwest Arkansas. He's also helped us with our work in the Baltic Republics, namely Estonia. Tim is very innovative and a resourceful person, always finding ways to become more effective in his work. And I've been very, very impressed by him and astounded by the success that he has had in reaching out locally in his region to promote the gospel of Jesus Christ. More than a decade ago, he inherited a small church with only about 10 people, which has now grown to more than 37. Not only has grown to that level, but is a thriving church with young people and children. So, Tim, at this point, I would like you to say a few things about yourself. If you could just tell us a little bit more about who you are.
Well, I grew up as a Minnesota farm boy, went to college, got a degree in economics, and then went off into the business world, worked for Land O'Lake in Iowa. And from there, I became an administrator at North Dakota State University in Fargo, North Dakota. And as a young man, that's where I gave my first sermonettes in 1979 and built a new research station there. So I had experience managing people, ideas, and things, all as a young person. It was really quite an excellent opportunity. When that project was done, started a small business in Oregon from the trunk that grew to a multi-million dollar company. And I did everything wrong, or at least except for the illegal ones, and learned everything the hard way in a recessionary time period in a terrible place to learn, which was the wood products capital of the country during a building recession.
Mm-hmm.
But spent the next many years in the industrial supply business, learning marketing in the real world, what works when everything else doesn't, had that opportunity and built a business. After selling that company, went to LA and wound up being the national sales manager for a company in Los Angeles in the industrial world. And then had to take what I learned in one state and apply it to the rest of the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a remarkable experience. Spent a lot of time on airplanes, visiting clients, and developing programs. What makes things work? What turns people to attention? So it was really a marketing focus. And then I made the transition to teaching in an unexpected way after 20 years. And found out it doesn't matter how much education you have. If you don't have a teaching certificate, you can't teach in school.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back to university, and this time in Arkansas, and got an advanced degree there and started teaching and spent over 20 years as a teacher,
uh-huh.
A high school teacher and teaching college classes at the high school level, advanced placement classes in a variety of those subjects. So I had a lot of FaceTime experience, face experience, mm-hmm. with students, a lot of back and forth, tapping into what worked and what didn't work, applying the marketing from the industrial world into the classroom.
Tim, this has been very interesting to me because I hadn't realized all the marketing work that you had done and your work out in the Northwest. This is just fascinating because I know of you as a teacher. All that information about your being in marketing has been very, very interesting. And also making things work when it seems that things aren't working. And that's very, very interesting.
Well, then as the December 2010 rolled around and we found ourselves with a small congregation, 8 adults and 2 kids, with no other congregation within 100 miles. They were more than 100 miles away in any direction, or 175 in a third one, we were determined to see what we could do to build our local congregation. And so first thing we had to do was bond as a congregation. Everybody was involved, but then everybody was only the 10 people, the 8 adults. We had an 86-year-old widow with terminal cancer who was the one that located and found a place for us to meet for Passover, a night to be much remembered. And later we talked and she said, well, she was never even looked at before. But in this case, everybody had to be on board, and she was. She started our card greeting program, initiated that, or, you know, for encouragement for people in other areas and congregations to keep us. And so who'd have thought that an 86-year-old widow with terminal cancer would be a leader in outreach?
Mm-hmm.
And yet was a wonderful example. We started out meeting at a hotel breakfast room at a motel, but it wasn't ideal circumstance, and we did locate a better venue that was very helpful, that happened to have a full kitchen. So one of the first things we did was start a weekly potluck. There was only a small group of us, but that was our only time to meet. We were spread out over a wider area. Our congregation is about 25 miles from the Oklahoma border and about 25 miles from the Missouri border. So we're mm-hmm. up in the corner of the state. And we knew there was enormous potential here because it's the world headquarters of Walmart, mm-hmm. the world headquarters of Tyson Foods, the biggest food processor in the country, the national headquarters of J.B. Hunt, the biggest private-owned trucking company, and nearby is the University of Arkansas, the flagship university in the state. So we had a lot of resources publicly. It was a matter of how do we tap into who be of interest to build our congregation. Now, I wasn't here in 1994 when they had hundreds of people in the Fayetteville congregation, but they're out there. Those mm-hmm. people, the families were out there that they left behind.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we did in 19, and this was in 2011, is we started having weekly potluck. And in that we could share the hopes and dreams and opportunities for each one of us. And it was kind of unusual because to have a weekly potluck was actually kind of crazy because everybody else has one once every month or two. But we started doing it because we could, and it was our opportunity to know each other better.
Mm-hmm.
What happened as a growth out of that is we started capturing video capture of all of our sermonettes and sermons and Bible studies. But the video capture was very helpful because when we started, I was the only experienced speaker, sermonettes or sermons. And at that point, but we had a couple of guys that had been through a sermonette training class the previous summer. And they said, well, now what are we going to do? And I turned to them and said, dress rehearsal is over. Now it's going to be the real thing. So whenever we have a speaker, the three of us will be able to rotate through a guest speaker and provide a sermonette for that. And so early on, we had connected to the webcast from Cincinnati. But we started a video capture of our sermonettes and sermons and Bible studies. And this helped us improve not only content, but delivery.
Mm-hmm.
We could see if we were on focus. It helped us build our self-assurance. Now, are we the greatest thing since sliced bread? No, we don't expect that. But we wanted to improve wherever we could.
Mm-hmm.
And we started building a little archive. And in order for us to review that, we set up a YouTube channel. For our local congregation, it's UCG with a space and NWA on YouTube. So we started archiving our early messages. And many other congregations, or some other congregations, were doing that. But if we were going to grow, we had to let other people know about that YouTube channel to let them know we were here. Not mm-hmm. that we were the only resource, but that we were local.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started a public Facebook page. And the public Facebook page, we didn't advertise. We were just there. So somebody would almost have to stumble across us like the treasure in the field. They would have mm-hmm. to find us by accident, just like they did on YouTube. Well, at first, the people that were subscribers on YouTube or followers on Facebook at first they were church members from other areas. In the in 2011, 2012, there wasn't a lot of technology being used in a lot of local congregations. And the feedback we got is they were relying on us for things like sermonettes that they couldn't get locally.
Mm-hmm.
And here we were producing them and found ourselves with a growing YouTube channel and a growing Facebook page. But that didn't change anything locally for us, other than we were just there and building an archive. Meanwhile, we set up a private Facebook page for the local congregation. So this asynchronous communication, we could talk about church things back and forth, events, happenings, plans, if there was a change in venue, because once in a while there was a conflict or a meeting conflict for our meeting hall where we would have to meet somewhere else. We could share that information very quick. Indeed, now we continue to use it for the congregation. And we share, for example, the weekly update from Cincinnati, the link right there, so everybody can grab it without having to look anywhere else. Locally, we printed weekly local church announcements. And we continue to do that, printed locally. And on those weekly announcements, we put the Beyond Today, what the latest playing is for the next week. We put on local announcements. We put on prayer requests. And then we also tag it at the bottom or at the end with our social media page addresses and our video archive addresses. So mm-hmm. any visitor that comes in the door can see that we are doing something beyond ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that means they could go to YouTube. Now, we did set up other video hosts besides YouTube. Mm-hmm. We learned in this politically correct environment, if you say the wrong thing, they will pull the plug on you. Mm-hmm. Indeed, they pulled the plug and they canceled my Bible study on the four horses of Revelation 6.
Wow.
Without any, no evidence, they just said it violated their community standards.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what they are. So we republished the exact same video on BitChute.
Mm-hmm.
BitChute.com is another video host, and it did quite well because we said this was canceled by YouTube. We also have posts on Rumble. We don't really advertise BitChute or Rumble, but they're there mm-hmm. in case we have a problem with YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so we put the addresses of that on our announcement bulletin. But we also know that in this politically correct environment, we can't trust Facebook. So we have MeWe and Gab. We're just there. We're not doing a lot with it, but we're there so that we're ready just in case they don't like our religious content.
Say that again. What are the other two?
Okay, besides and Facebook, mm-hmm. we are on MeWe, M-E-W-E, and Gab, G-A-B.
Mm-hmm.
Those are social media platforms that are our alternative platforms where we post.
Mm-hmm.
Part of this is, for example, a member of parliament in Finland and a Lutheran bishop in Finland were prosecuted criminally for quoting the Bible.
Amazing.
And so I've been watching that case for some time, and it ultimately went to their, and they had spent great sums to defend themselves, but ultimately they won out at the highest court, but it took many years.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that we're at risk of being canceled.
Well, what types of things did they say in this particular case, the Finnish people?
Well, in their case, it had to do with homosexuality, gender dysphoria,
mm-hmm.
in that flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And all they did was quote the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
But you can get into trouble in some places just by quoting the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that could happen to us. So we locally set up alternatives, just in case we ran into that problem. But locally, then we had, I will say back in 2011 and 2012, we had visitors were kickstarted by come in because we had the Kingdom of God seminars. And the Kingdom of God seminars were helpful. I was surprised Because in my marketing background, if you get 1.5% response on almost anything, that's a normal response. And we had 13 new people walk in the door, and they most of came in at the last minute. You know, first somebody comes, oh, great, we have a visitor. What, we have another one? And then another one, and pretty soon we had 13 people, which was it was kind of shocking at first to get used to. Some of them stayed.
Mm-hmm.
And came on to be members. They may have had experience in other fellowships or were looking for a place to go since 1995 on the WCG meltdowns. So there was interest, and it helped fulfill that interest for them. And so we had an 85-year-old gentleman, and I said, well, why did you come? And why are you fellowshipping with us? And now he was 85, and he said, well, that other church, they're just a bunch of old people. And he made it, I think, another 8 or 9 years before he passed. But Tim, looking for hope.
What was the attraction? You know, you have 13 people come, probably didn't even know each other. What was the attraction? What was the thing that really attracted them and brought engagement to your congregation?
Almost every person that came in the door said that they had seen us online. They found us online somehow, whether they found us on Facebook, found us on YouTube. We also set up a local internet webpage that really was it was like a mirror of our webpage from UCG in Cincinnati, our congregation page. But we had the flexibility to target local people, and then we put the links directly to Cincinnati. But our local page was a host for our messages and information. And that way, if somebody wanted to look up Sabbath in Northwest Arkansas, our page would pop up.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, we had people walk in the door. They had punched in Sabbath on the internet, and our name for our congregation pops up on the internet, and they walk in the door not knowing which Sabbath, not for sure which Sabbath keeping congregation they were coming into.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a few hilarious stories about that. And that's still an ongoing case where they walk in and they think that they're somewhere else. They come and they stay.
Well, it's amazing, Tim, what your congregation has done, because I know that people try to do these things and they mention certain keywords that might be attractive, but nothing happens or very little happens. And you have had success in people appearing, coming, and staying.
Well, if everybody who visited stayed, we would have hundreds in the congregation. I think that's true everywhere.
That's true everywhere, right.
We do put out the booklets every week, set up a table, and I made a free sign, free literature sign, and put it by the booklets, so they weren't inhibited for browsing through the booklets. I print out the Home Office weekly update for those people who are not on the internet, so they can read that update and they have a connection to the church as a whole. Also weekly, we have, actually once a month, we have a Bible study. It's the first Sabbath of the month, and it's regularly scheduled. It's an abbreviated church service. We have no sermonette, just announcements and sermon. And then after the service, we go into a Bible study.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bible studies, we vary them in that we've tried different things. And I've given a Bible study presentation without any response mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've done them a Bible study presentation in which we count off however many people we have and divide into small groups of 5 or 6 people,
mm-hmm.
preferably not over that. Preferably not under 5 and not over 6. So we divide it out and we just count off in the congregation so that husbands and wives and family members won't be in the same group.
Uh-huh.
And then we give them about 4 or 5 questions to consider based on that Bible study. And everybody has a voice in that small group. It takes the fear of talking away in a whole group, in mm-hmm. a larger group. And everybody can feel that they are part of the organization. And then each group then reports the answers to those questions. And those are really application questions, whether it has to do with a holy day or Christmas or Easter or the topic of the day. they can participate. And people, when they participate, they bond to the organization.
Mm-hmm.
I know this from my marketing and psychology background, that it takes six times of attending in a row for someone to feel bonded to the organization.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're there six times, they're keepers.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been true over time. The other thing we know is that you have to, in marketing, you've got to have four or five impressions or contacts for people to give you credibility.
Mm-hmm.
If you have four or five contacts with them before they ever come in the door, you now have credibility. And this is where the Facebook and YouTube comes in. In addition to the letters from home office, the Beyond Today contact, there's now a local contact. And after four or five contacts, people then have, they will give you the credibility as being an institution or an organization that's worth knowing. However, contact isn't enough. You need frequency of contact. I know that in marketing, they say if it's radio or television, you need to see something 2.2 times a week to initiate action. Well, we aren't radio or television, and we don't have that kind of budget. Actually, we have next to no budget. So we're doing this all on a shoestring. And so what we've done is try to keep our Facebook page fresh by posting new content every week.
Mm-hmm.
So if we post a sermonette each week, and then we post a sermon each week, we've also been posting special music from time to time, has to meet certain criteria. And then we will also post from time to time a meme. What that does is it refreshes people's interest.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to the Kingdom of God seminar, we experimented, we sent out a general mailing, a postal from through the post office, and we did letters with maps and we did postcards. And we got more than once, got 13 more people walked in the door.
Uh-huh.
But we discovered that nobody came from more than 40 miles away.
Well, 40 miles is a long ways.
40 miles. I mean, normally people won't go more than 5 miles to go to church. And so we said, if we're going to advertise on Facebook, it doesn't make any sense to spend money for people that are not going to come. We want the most bang for our buck.
Mm-hmm.
So the initial paid advertisement we did on Facebook was within that 40-mile range.
Mm-hmm.
But then we discovered that Facebook considers 40 miles from the zip code of your target to the zip code of the person you're trying to reach, and it wound up to be 60 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So now we advertise within 15 miles of our church meeting place, and that really stretches out to about 40 miles.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And we can target on Facebook, we can target an audience. The audience we target, we can target by gender or geography or interest.
Mm-hmm.
And if you target by interest, and we've generally not targeted by interest, we've just targeted by geography and not by gender. And we cast a wide net.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to focus a little better, we started experimenting with targeting on interest areas for people that had certain interests,
mm-hmm.
such as Sabbath, Bible, basic common interests. So, and we haven't over the years gotten very much hate mail.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I started a YouTube or a Facebook page for Estonia. I also started one recently for Norway.
Mm-hmm.
About one-third of the responses are hate responses, which is very unlike the Bible Belt.
Uh-huh.
And so I've learned that you've really got to target people's interests, or you're going to get the satanic worshipers coming in very unhappy with you.
Are they hateful of the topics that you offer, or are they hateful of you?
Well, I have no evidence that they are hateful of any person. They just, if you are not a Bible believer, they're in a background in a foreign country, where they don't have the same Bible background that they would in the South Central United States. Here, it's very rare that you get a caustic comment or somebody or mockers. Mm-hmm. There, frankly, it's you can expect to the general public about one third of the responses will be mocking. Mm-hmm. So I've learned to target.
Well, one thing that I find very interesting in what you said is the importance of frequency of a message coming out and having it changed. I feel like when I first became involved with the church, so to speak, this is a long time ago, back in the 1960s, there was a daily radio program, The World Tomorrow, and I was listening to it every day. In fact, I listened to it for a whole year before I did anything. I was just not suspicious, but just didn't know what to write, who to write to, or what I would get. And so it took a long time, but it was that daily contact. I looked forward to it. It was interesting. And then finally, it sunk in. And I feel like when you go to something that's irregular or once a week even, it's too far apart, the messages, where they don't really stick. And I found that with your frequent touches on your audience has been helpful in bringing people more to the fore. Like you said, they're out there and they've seen these things before, but they've never connected with somebody who is a real live person and a real live organization.
I grew up on a dairy farm, and my parents were not in the church. I didn't come into the church until I was a senior in college. But while we're milking cows, we would listen to The World Tomorrow on mm-hmm. the radio, because it was on every day.
Mm-hmm, right.
And it was interesting. The cows got a lot of dosage of those. And of course, it was every day, five days a week with one speaker and 2 days a week with another speaker. And it was a lot of planting of seeds.
It was.
There wasn't anybody who didn't know that the program was there.
Well, I know that it was coverage. My first years of working in the ministry was a lot of long drives across the western states, Nebraska, South Dakota, and we would hear the World Tomorrow program sometimes a couple times in the evening as we were driving, but it was just always there, and it made an impact. And I feel like there are other ways, like you said, we can't afford daily television, for example, or daily radio. But there are other means now to communicate, podcasting, for example. I mean, podcasting is very, very inexpensive if you can build an audience there. Or even other means, there's even internet radio and other cheaper alternatives if you can find a way to do it.
Well, as an economics teacher, I would teach you maximize the profit or you minimize the loss. How can we make the most of what we have? Mm-hmm. So I really like the word free. Mm-hmm. Facebook just showing up was free. Mm-hmm. YouTube was free. And that's really how we got started. And only selective messages then we started to promote. I will say that for quite some time, everybody who came in the door admitted, oh, well, we were watching you on Facebook or YouTube for the last 4 months. Uh-huh. And finally felt comfortable enough to walk in the door. It was a little unnerving from time to time when somebody walks in and they point at me and say, there he is. Uh-huh. But it was also encouraging to know that there was a message that was getting out there.
Well,
regardless of the carrier.
One thing, Tim, I have really appreciated. My wife and I are fans of yours. You know, we listen to your sermons. You know, you have something to say. And, you know, you have a wide background in, like I said, marketing, teaching, international, and so forth. When you bring these things up, they're interesting. And I feel like if you talk about it and have others who can talk about it, you become a place of interest, a place where people can get information and would even want to know more, connected with their personal connection with the spiritual, with the Bible and other things. So I really applaud what you do, Tim, and the way that you have been able to come from nothing virtually to a vibrant congregation.
Well, thank you. I know that one of the principles that I tell our developing speakers, and I try to practice myself, is when the sermon is over, can anybody remember what you said? By the time we finished the potluck, does anybody know what subject it was, or did it just go in one year and out the other? And people remember things if you have a personal anecdote that you can tie to the subject. They will remember how you said it, and they will relate it to their own lives. So I try to include some kind of anecdote in order to captivate the audience, to bring their interest into their own lives. If you don't, it becomes what I call the same old, same old. Everybody knows, well, okay, we're just going to rehearse what we could go home and read.
Mm-hmm.
But if you develop points of interest that they can connect with, then you see the nods. And then that's shared during the potluck afterwards. Well, this happened to me, or this happened to me, or I had that similar experience. And they go through it, and now they're relating the message to their lives, and that provides value to them. They feel valued because they feel connected.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have that reinforcement, it then becomes their congregation and not just a congregation that they go to. Right now we've got 10 preteen kids, from 3 to 12 years of age. Well, kids will be increasingly bored because they have even adults have an 8-minute attention span.
Mm-hmm.
Kids are even less. So my wife and another lady provide preteen Sabbath school lessons almost every week so that the kids are engaged in a Bible lesson. And there's a remarkable thing that has happened because of that. They are following the examples after church of even the kids are putting away the chairs, straightening everything up, putting dishes away, cleaning tables, helping, sweeping the floor. And when you see the 4, 5, 6, 7, 8-year-olds jumping in doing it, they have ownership in the congregation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what we're looking at, is everybody has a sense of ownership rather than, how shall we say, being subjected to control and people telling them what to do. We don't tell anybody, we don't have to tell anybody what to do. They're too busy doing it.
Well, it seems like you have been able to connect the local church congregation to where those who are interested, when they come, they have load. I mean, they have something to do. They have some purpose for being there. It's really quite a story what you've done with not only your marketing, but also with the local congregation. When I was doing work with evangelism, we talked about the ladder of involvement, what it took to get people to come in the door, for example, which in itself can be a challenge when there are so many voices out there, but to have them come into the door. But then once they come into the door, you want them to move up another rung in the ladder of involvement to the next step of becoming involved, ultimately being led to commitment, to baptism, and ultimately to eternal life. You know, that's what it's all about. And when you have the whole thing there, and not to have a broken rung or a missing step in the ladder, because you come to the end and you have no place to go, and you'll die on that particular rung. So I think it's important that it's holistic all the way through, from the message to the kind of message, to the way that people become involved with stories, the way they become involved with principles and the truth, and then being led to making a commitment.
Thank you. I know the content we try to do is stuff that we're not used to hearing. I had one visitor who was in another COG, and I gave a message on anointing. And he goes, you know, all these years, I've never heard one where it's specifically laid out before. Did another one on baptism, where, and so forth, when you go through it. Series of Bible studies on the travels of Paul, but particularly responsibilities for elders. They've never heard, you know, these are unusual messages. So we try to give messages that are not everyday messages.
Right.
I know that. And some of them that catch the wave, as it were, are shocking and surprising to us. I never thought one of our sermonette guys, you know, gave a Matthew 16:28 sermonette, and it's got 4,800 plus views and growing still, and that was 9 years ago.
What was the attraction?
I'm not sure, but the entire title was Matthew 16:28. And then I did one 3 years ago on the biblical significance of the number 40.
Mm-hmm.
That thing has got over 4,600 views, and it's growing a little bit every day.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going, not always predictable as to which ones are going to grow, which one's going to catch a wave. But what happens is if people find something interesting, they will share it on a forum or a group somewhere. And that means often outside of our fellowship. And this is true also now in foreign countries. We have had responses, and we're talking recently, from most parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
In our little congregation, we're going, how did this happen? You get a response from Nepal. I mean, I was on the internet one morning, and you can search out who's hitting your website. And we had a hit from Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
We have, just all over the, in places that you would never imagine. Morocco was recently. And so it's places all over the world that was just a surprise. But that isn't because we're advertising there.
Mm-hmm.
But because people they know, or people who know we have friends in common or contacts in common to the third or fourth or fifth degree, are really spreading the gospel for us.
Mm-hmm.
Some lady in Germany recently has been sharing everything that we put up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, but she speaks English, and we find that true. And same with Norway or Estonia or elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that I have had a prayer line when I started my website back in 1996. I had the URL or the address is still out there, and I still get people who write to me. Sometimes it's a very poignant letter of a family situation, and they're asking me to pray for it. This one woman from Italy wrote to me how she just said, can you please pray for me and for my children and everything? And so I don't know her. I will never know her. But I did ask God to please be with her, to help her, to comfort her, because somehow she found our line, and she looked to us as hope. I know that these people are beyond the 15-mile limit of attending services and all, but it is part of our outreach. It's part of spreading the seed far, far away. But we also have to take a closer look of how we can develop the planting within driving distance and building community within driving distance, which is what you have done. We appreciate that.
We change up the Bible studies. It isn't just small group. We also, as a school teacher, I've done a lot of Kahoot video game development.
Mm-hmm.
So I developed those for our Bible studies. So I would create a Kahoot video game, say, for example, the Beatitudes.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the presentation, I do PowerPoint presentation on that. And everybody with a smartphone, I tell them ahead of time, they could bring their laptop or their smartphone. And they would play the video game at the close of the Bible study, where they could all see, they could see the retention. And what's remarkable is we have a wonderful group. We're having over 90% retention after a Bible study using the Kahoot video games.
Mm-hmm.
And then recently we stumbled into another one quite by accident. We had a Bible study, and I didn't have a small group questions prepared. I didn't have a Kahoot prepared. So I said, we're going to try press conference style question and answers today. So after the presentation, I said, go ahead and I'll pretend I'm a politician and you ask me questions.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will give you answers. And if I don't like your question, I'll rephrase it and give an answer to the new question.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a great time with that.
Uh-huh.
Because then they were all engaged. They had an opportunity to be engaged. I've never had the nerve to do that until now. enough confidence, because that's kind of scary.
No, but that's what they see.
Lighthearted and helpful.
But that's what they see on TV. That's the way they see people communicate. And if we could emulate some of the ways in which people do it to speak the truth, that would be a win.
They love to participate. They want it to be their work, their congregation. It isn't just a pastor or a deacon or whoever is operating a song leader. I mean, now we've got three song leaders for a little congregation, four sermonette givers. This is all very, very helpful. There is no elder, like I say, no other church for many, many miles. So we're on our own. We have to keep that on the map.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tim, this has been just very, very interesting to hear about what you're doing. We actually have tapped into you, our congregation where I attend in Indianapolis, and wanted to know more about what you're doing, because we want to do some of the same things and be able to, with a congregation of more like 110 to 120 people, be able to have an outreach from the northeast section of Indianapolis to the whole metropolitan area. And I feel like we can get there, because we have a lot of enthusiastic people who want to become involved, and we're thankful how patient and how you have been able to share your information.
Well, we have over 1,200 now on our Facebook page, and mm-hmm. it grows every week, over 600 on our YouTube channel. The bulk of those now Facebook, and the growth is all local within Northwest Arkansas or the neighboring Southwest Missouri, Northeast Oklahoma. And recently I've tapped into the Fort Smith area. We have over 1,000 people on our mature Beyond Today mailing list
mm-hmm.
that may or may not overlap with our Facebook mm-hmm. promotions.
Mm-hmm.
So we now have more than one way to get to people.
And that's one of the secrets too, is not all, there's not no one particular way that is the silver bullet to reach people. Some people like to listen to podcasts, others listen to a Beyond Today television program, others like the printed magazine to read our literature that is booklet format, study guide format. So it takes all this curated and compiled and presented. And I think that's where we need to be going.
One other little thing I do is I have business cards.
Mm-hmm.
I learned this at Land O'Lakes 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, it's not a sales call unless you leave something behind.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have something there, evidence that you've been there. And I've adopted that policy from my time back in the Fortune 500, that where the sales manager says, you have to, if there's no evidence that you've been there, your memory will fade very quickly, electronically.
Mm-hmm.
And so we make sure that everybody has a contact information, an announcement bulletin, a business card. They need that contact information they can take with them. The same thing as if I do anything in the mail, they'll get a business card so that there has contact information.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you're going to laugh when you find out, and maybe you had it too, what's the first question that somebody asks when they call about coming to church? What should I wear?
Really? Really?
They're self-conscious. As I've had that question asked, is the most universal question.
Well, that's a surprise to me, actually, because in the time of less formality, that's interesting to hear.
Well, there was a couple of fellows that came with wearing bib overalls.
Mm-hmm.
Nice, clean, neat, but they had just new coming to church. The next, and they wore those the first 2 weeks. Then 3 weeks, they were into trousers and a shirt, mm-hmm. a button shirt. It took them about a month or 6 weeks before they showed up with a suit, but they acculturated.
Mm-hmm.
You can't scare them off with your culture. We didn't berate them or tell them what to do and how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We just welcomed them and loved them
mm-hmm.
and encouraged them. And they started adopting the church culture,
mm-hmm.
Whether, you know, with the program, it was repetitive. So they knew what to expect. People like structure and they like to participate.
Well, a lot of conversion, well, it's everything about conversion has to do with attitude and what you want to learn and how you really come to the point of obedience and submission. and cooperation. So that you can't beat into people. It's something that they have to come to. Well, Tim, it's been very, very good talking to you. It's been great. Is there anything else you would like to say in the last final minutes here?
Well, we're happy to help whoever we can and wherever we can. We're not hard to find on the internet anymore.
No, we have really appreciated finding you. I've gone to your site, and at some of the conferences I have shown your site, but I don't believe that we really have the gung-ho spirit overall to the level that I'd like to see it be what you have in Northwest Arkansas. So you are a good example.
Well, you're very kind.
So thank you very much. We appreciate your agreeing to be on the podcast and be able to share some of your thoughts, and not only your thoughts with the audience, but also your thoughts with other groups, like our church, local church, for example, where we want to see what more we can do in our community by tapping into some of the things you've learned in your experience.
Thank you for the opportunity to share.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for listening to us today on The Cubic Report. We welcome you to share this podcast and tell your friends about it. We can be found on a variety of platforms, including Apple and Google Podcasts, Pandora, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Audible, and many other platforms. You can easily find us at any browser address box by typing in the words, The Cubic Report, and there we are. Remember, Cubic is spelled K-U-B-I-K. We'd love to hear from you. Write to us at vcubic@gmail.com. That's vkubik@gmail.com. Again, thank you for listening. Come back soon for more.